I want to live fast, love hard, die young, and leave a beautiful memory.
You might even call me a 20th century drifter. 32 weekends, I load up the car and I'm gone.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this very special evening here on VIP Conduit. Of course, I'm Mar, or Country Music Bar, Mar. And it is so good to have so many people here, and we are just so honored to bring to our site Diane Diekman, who is really a very fascinating lady. I just read her Navy Green Shirt book, and I was just amazed at all the different things that she has accomplished in her life. Diane, thank you so much for consenting to come on and be interviewed.
Oh, I enjoy having an opportunity to talk about Farron and Marty and Randy and my books.
Super. Well, we've got an awful lot of life to condense into a short time, but we'll do our best here. First of all, where were you born?
In South Dakota, in a little town called Clear Lake.
How many siblings do you have?
There are five total. Four of us grew up together, two boys and two girls, and then our little brother came along when I was just starting college. So he, poor kid, he always had six adults he had to listen to while he was growing up.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a neat family. What is your most memorable moment from your early childhood? Anything stand out above anything else?
All the things we did, just growing up on a farm and doing chores and baling hay and milking cows and butchering chickens and all the things you did on a farm, and going to a one-room country school and visiting neighbors. It was just a family life.
Yeah, great. That's a good segue, because next, I'm going to ask you a little bit about that one-room school. I think most of us can't even identify with something like that, although some of us can perhaps a little bit more. Some of us went to boarding schools for the blind in our various states. How many grades were in your school?
Well, there were eight. It was the first through eighth grade. It was grade school. We didn't have kindergarten. We started school in the first grade, and we stayed there till we graduated from the eighth grade, and then we went to high school in town.
What was your favorite class?
I love to read. So when I was in the first grade, I read more books than anybody else in school. My books probably weren't very big, but I read more than anybody else. So I always liked history, and we called it language, English classes, those sorts of things. Everything except science I enjoyed, because I just liked going to school.
So you learned to read. Once you learned to read, your interest was quite voracious. That's great. So you went to, did you go to the high school in the same town where you were raised?
Yes. Well, I wasn't raised in town. Our farm was 9 miles out of town, but that was my hometown. That's the hospital where I was born. That's where the high school was. That's where we went to church. That's where we went on Saturday nights to sell the cream and eggs and go shopping.
Were your parents employed other than working on the farm?
Working on a farm is a full-time job. No, we farmed three-quarters of a section. That's like a half a mile by a mile and a half long. That's how big our farm was. So in addition to raising crops and such, we raised cattle. We milked cows. We had chickens. There was a lot of work.
Yeah, sounds like it. Were you involved in any extracurricular activities through your schooling, like music or drama or sports or anything like that?
No, music, drama, and sports were three things that I had absolutely no interest in and no ability for. We went to school, and then after school, we went home and we worked on the farm. I was a member of the Future Homemakers of America, and my brother was a member of the Future Farmers of America, because those were the groups that boys and girls belonged to, and they didn't cross into each other. But other than that, we didn't go to many activities at all in town in the evenings, not many school activities.
Yeah, since you lived out in the country, I don't imagine you had a lot of school friends that you chummed around with. I can certainly relate to that, because I was also raised in the country, so I didn't have school friends either. So you went to college. I was checking out your website, which I will give the URL to at the end, or you can, because you probably give it right. And you went to college to be a teacher. Is that correct?
I grew up wanting to teach a one-room country school. I'm sure some of you have heard of Laura Ingalls Wilder. She was my role model. I read her books while I was in school, and that's what I wanted to do, was teach in a one-room country school. So my plan was to go to a teacher's college, get my teaching degree, and find a little school to teach. Well, while I was in, maybe high school, South Dakota passed a law that all schools had to be part of 12-year districts. So our district of the country schools went away, and we became part of the Clear Lake District. So they closed the country schools, and all the kids went to school in town. And I did not want to teach in town school, so I did get my degree in elementary education and in English and Spanish, and I did my student teaching when I was a senior in college, and then I applied for the Navy. My sister and I had talked about joining the Navy. Mom had been in the Navy during World War II, so we knew it was an option. It was an interesting-sounding career. So while I was in college, my sister graduated from high school, and she joined the Navy. So when I graduated from college the next year, then I joined the Navy. So I never taught school.
So after reading your book, I discovered that the Navy then became a lifelong career for you. How long were you in the Navy?
32 years. When I enlisted in the Navy, I was concerned about signing a 4-year enlistment contract, because I thought, I'm signing away 4 years of my life. What if something happens? What if I find a man I want to marry? But I joined the Navy. I enjoyed it. And my goal was to get promoted within 2 years to be a second class petty officer. And I did that, and then I put in a request to go to officer candidate school and become an officer. And by that time, I was a lifer. I knew back then that I would stay in the Navy as long as I could.
What were your biggest challenges in going up through the ranks?
My personal challenge was gaining confidence. I was this bashful little country girl who didn't talk to anybody. When I was in college, I preferred lecture classes so I could take notes and didn't have to talk. And as soon as the teacher said, well, 10% of your grade is class participation, then I knew that I'd lose that 10% because I wasn't going to participate. So for me, I really don't know how I did it to join the Navy and then become an officer and be a leader and be in charge of people. And I started giving speeches. I just did what I had to do. I did what the job required. I did what was necessary. I wanted to succeed. And being a woman in a man's world. I had to work really hard to try to be perfect and not make mistakes. So I just got better at all of it.
Were you stationed overseas?
Several times. After my promotion to captain, my job then was to go to Japan. So I went there on a two-year tour, but I extended for a year. So I spent 3 years in Japan, and I did a lot of traveling in that job. Earlier, I had spent 2 years on the island of Guam, and during my years in the Navy, I visited a lot of different places. And you read about it in Navy Green Shirt, where I was in a patrol squadron in Jacksonville, Florida, and we deployed to Rota, Spain, and we deployed to Iceland for 5 months. So I spent some time overseas then, but going to a lot of conferences and things over the years, I've been to places that I never in my life thought I would go, like Singapore and Bahrain and Diego Garcia, a little island off the coast of India. You know, those were names I had heard of, and now I can say that I've been to all those places, and I certainly never expected that to happen.
Wow, that is very cool. So you went up through all the ranks, and you eventually achieved captain. That must have been amazing to you, looking back on the progress and the trials and the high points and everything that got you there.
Well, in the Navy, you get a new job every 3 years. A tour of duty is 3 years, and the Navy's really tight on the rotation because the seesaw rotation because of the ships and the overseas duty and all that. They keep moving people around so that nobody gets stuck on a ship for a long time or some far overseas space. So everything is pretty well controlled to those 3 year rotations. So I always went to a new duty assignment, and I looked forward to what would happen there and the people that I would meet. And I did the best I could at each duty station. And I seldom looked past that next duty station. I went there to do a good job. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about my career and where I would end up. I just took it one duty station at a time and one promotion at a time. And I just worked for those and did what needed to be done. And it worked out that I just kept transferring to different places, and I got promoted each time I was up for promotion. And, well, I deserved it, of course, but, you know, not everybody gets promoted. So I was always grateful each time the selection list came out and my name was on it. And that meant I could stay in the Navy and keep moving up. And I think I did a good job for the Navy, and the Navy took care of me, and we got along just fine.
Super. Have you always had an interest in country music?
Yes, my entire life. The first concert I remember going to, I was about 5 years old. It's when I fell in love with Carl Smith. And I'm not sure how much of this I remember and how much Mom told me, but I do remember Carl Smith was wearing a red suit and Mom was dressed in red that night. And I later found out that Marty Robbins and I think Hank Snow had been at that concert in Watertown, South Dakota, but the only one I remembered was Carl Smith. And after the concert, whenever his songs would come on the radio, Mom would call me and I'd go running in the house to listen to Carl Smith on the radio. And the first two songs I actually remember hearing were Marty Robbins, A White Sport Coat and a Pink Carnation, and Johnny Cash, I Walked the Line. So those were in the mid-late 50s, 57, somewhere around there. And that's all I've ever listened to my entire life. When I was in college, I was alone because nobody else was interested in country music, and I wasn't interested in their music. So I've always been a huge country music fan.
You and Barbara Mandrell were country when country wasn't cool. Me too. I started getting interested when I was about 10 years old, and I haven't left. So that's great. Did you get a chance to hear any country music while you were in the Navy?
Well, most every place had a radio station that was that had one country station. So, yes, pretty much every place I went. And then, of course, I always had my stereo with me and my albums that I played and transferred from one duty station to the next. So I've acquired quite a collection of LPs and 45s, and I got rid of my 8-tracks, but I still have a bunch of cassettes and CDs, so I've got a lot of music.
Yeah, I never got into 8-tracks, but I have cassettes and CDs, and there's a bunch of us here that just love country music. When did your interest in writing begin?
Probably in the early 90s. I got this urge. I wanted to tell our family stories, like growing up on the farm and the things that happened when we were kids. So I took a correspondence course from the Children's Institute of Literature. Actually, I took two courses from them. The second one was how to write a children's book. And when so I worked on my Farm in the Hydewood book, about growing up on the farm and going to the one-room country school. But I realized that I didn't want to write it just for children. I wrote it in my natural voice, and I wrote a story that anybody who would enjoy that would read, but it wasn't focused on children. And when I finished that correspondence course where I was working on that book, the last lesson in that course was to write the first chapter of your next book. And I thought, I don't have another book in me. That's the only book I'm ever going to write. But I immediately knew, it came to me, I do have another book. I'll write a book about my Navy career. And it will start in 1978 when I went to maintenance officer school, and it will end in 97 when I made captain, because by that time I was in Japan and I had been selected for captain. So I knew when that book would end. So I worked on those two books, but my writing had improved throughout the years, my military writing, because I had to write all kinds of instructions and award recommendations and evaluations for my sailors and all that sort of thing. So a lot of my job was writing, and I did not like the verbose military writing, and you say something three times and put a lot of unnecessary words in it. So I kind of gained the reputation for when I'd rewrite an instruction in my command, I'd say, I'm going to cut this instruction in half. And it was much better for having got rid of all the excess. So it was kind of parallel. My writing became much better through my military job. And then I also worked on my books, and I wrote a newspaper column for my hometown newspaper that talked about my travels, the different places that I went. So that gave me writing practice also.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That column was mentioned in your book. So how in the world did you get interested in writing a biography on a country music artist?
Well, I was in Japan when Farron Young died. And for the next several years, whenever there was anybody mentioned that where I thought his name should have been, he wasn't acknowledged. The only time you heard his name mentioned was if somebody was talking about Willie Nelson and they said, well, he wrote Hello Walls for Farron Young. And I didn't want Farron to be forgotten. And I needed a retirement career anyway. By this time, I was a Navy commander of I'd been in the Navy over 20 years, so I knew I was going to have to retire, and I'd have to have something to do, and I wasn't going to go out and look for another career, so I thought, well, I'll write biographies as my retirement career. And I thought, this would give me an opportunity to meet all the singers that I've spent my entire life listening to be able to talk to them and ask for their Farron Young stories. And everybody who knew Farron Young had stories to tell about him. And I thought, what a neat thing this would be to do, to talk to people about Farron Young and then write his biography so he wouldn't be forgotten. Except that I didn't know how to write a biography. I didn't know how to publish a book, and I didn't know anybody in the music business. So when I came back to the United States from Japan, I was stationed in Los Angeles, so I really started from scratch to figure out how to do this.
Wow. Now, you actually knew Farron Young personally, didn't you?
I did. I first met him in college. He had done a show here in Sioux Falls, and I usually walked downtown to the Coliseum to when I went to the concerts that came to town every month. I didn't have a car, so every place I went, I walked. And that night, so it was like midnight, and Farron found out I was planning to walk back to my dorm, and he said, no, you get in the bus. So I got in Farron's tour bus, and they came to my college dorm, and then the driver shone the spotlight on the dorm, so all that bright light, I'm sure, woke everybody up, and they'd look out their window, and here I get off this bus and go inside. But so anyway, that was a memorable first meeting, and then after I joined the Navy, I would go to see Farron in concert wherever he was close enough for me to go. And talked to him a few times, and of course he and the band members remembered that night of bringing me to my college dorm. And Farron kind of had an interest in seeing me move up through the ranks. He was proud of me, I guess. So it got to be wherever he'd see me standing in the audience in front of the stage, he would render a salute. He seemed proud of my military career, and that was what we had in common, I guess, because he liked to complain about when he was in the Army, but he didn't really have such a tough life in the Army because he was in special services. So, but it still gave something to talk about.
Yeah, he was. We got a chance to work with him when I was working in a little country music show in Minnesota, and we had him for our first anniversary celebration. And he was so nice to us. And after they left, they were the only organization that we had work for us that wrote to us and thanked us for our homemade food. You know, they said it was so refreshing that they had homemade food. And so that was really memorable. I'll just never forget that.
He could be really nice to people, and he always treated me with respect. I never saw his bad side, but a lot of people did, and of course I wrote about it in the book, and I interviewed many people who forgave him for it and some who just didn't like him because of the way he behaved. So he really did have two sides, but I only ever saw his proper side.
That's neat. So then you rewrote that book, and then you wrote one on Marty Robbins. What spurred you to do that?
I was finishing up Farron's biography, and I decided I can write another one. And I was watching a Marty Robbins spotlight one night with Farron and George Jones as Marty's guest. And it hit me that, how about writing a biography of Marty? And I did some research, and there had been no biography of him written yet. And I thought he would be an interesting person to write about, because not only his music career, which I had always been a fan of his music, but his Navy career. He was in the combat in the Pacific during World War II with the Navy, and then his NASCAR career. And I thought those would be interesting subjects to research in addition to his music. And the University of Illinois Press, which had published my Farron Young biography, when the editor found out I was starting to work on Marty Robbins, she wanted to publish that one also. And I said, well, sure. So I got started on his. And so I finished the first draft of Farron's in 2005, started working on Marty's. Farron's biography was published in 2007, and then Marty's was published in 2012.
Tell us about your new project.
Well, I'm now writing my third biography of a Hall of Fame member for the University of Illinois Press, and it's Randy Travis. And I've had the contract for several years, and COVID, of course, slowed it down, and also the word had gone out that Randy's management didn't want me writing this book about him. And I think part of the issue was he had just published his memoir, and they thought a biography would be competing with that. And we set up a meeting where he and Mary and his publicist talked to me and my publisher, and we explained that, no, it's not a competition, that a valid, objective biography of him would take about 5 years before it was published, and it might increase interest in his memoir, and his memoir is very important to me. I use that as a source. That's where I find his stories, and where I find out about people to contact and hear them tell their stories about Randy. And it's a great research tool for me. And recently, my boyfriend and I drove down to Texas. I had set it up with Mary Travis, Randy's wife, to be able to talk to some of the medical people who had worked with Randy after his stroke. And while we were down there, she invited us over to their ranch, and we spent the night with Randy and Mary at their ranch and saw some of the amazing amount of stuff he has. If I wanted to, I could go down to Texas and spend any amount of time going through boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff to document his career. So I'm not sure how much of that I'll make use of, but they have saved a lot of stuff from his career. And Mary gave me the contact information for several people to interview, and that certainly has added to the story that I'm writing about him.
Wow. Yeah, you wrote about your visit in your newsletter. And that actually brings up my next segment, and that is your newsletter. How long have you been doing that?
I started that in 2005. When I was researching Farron's life and writing about it, and I collected up a small group of people, like the country deputies as band members and other people that I had interviewed, and I thought, I'd love to share some of this information, sort of 50 years ago this week, Farron was doing this, and 55 years ago this week, he discovered this. So that was how I started the newsletter, is I would just do those kind of 50-year-ago things and put in any progress I was making about finding a publisher or anything like that. So I sent it out to the email addresses that I had, which was probably about 45 people. And then it grew over the years. And then I started writing, I started adding the letters that people would write to me. And then I would put in the different people that I'd interviewed and that kind of thing. So it just expanded. So then, of course, when I started Marty's biography, then I added all the stuff about Marty Robbins. So by the time I had published both those books, I had pretty much run out of anything to say. You know, I thought, well, should I quit this newsletter? Like in 2013, I said, so there's, I'll just be repeating myself. And then my friend Perry, he said, well, why don't you just turn it into a general country music newsletter? Don't just write about Farron and Marty, write about news, what's happening with country music. So I started doing that, and the readership continued to increase, and people liked the letters, and I come up with different things to put in there, like I talked about all the members of the Country Music Hall of Fame, and that took me a couple years, doing a year at a time, and now I'm working on everyone who's in the Songwriters Hall of Fame, and that's going to take me 2 years to talk about all of them. So, and then I put book reviews and talk about songs and various things. So my readership has increased up until I have almost 900 people who get my newsletter now. And I just got one from Vietnam. That's the first person I have from there. I've got people in Canada, England, Scotland, Australia, Germany, France, but I'd never had anybody from Vietnam before, so it's growing.
Well, I'll tell you, I sure look forward to it every 2 weeks. It's just so neat that you are keeping up with the people that record real country music, and I know there's a number of us here who enjoy it and have talked about it in various occasions. Are your back issues archived anywhere?
They are all on my website. I have them, of course, that I could send anybody any individual one, and I file them in a Word document by year. But they are all on my website, which, as you mentioned earlier, my website is dianne@dianedeekman.com. And my name is spelled DianeDiekman. Oh, excuse me, that was my email address, I think, I just gave you. If anybody wants to get my newsletter, they can send me an email at dianne@dianedeekman.com. But my website is dianedeekman.com, and you go there to the newsletter blog section, and you will find all the newsletters that I have published.
Oh, that's great to know. I can't remember when I started getting it, but it would just be neat to see how it has evolved through the years. Well, sure, you sure have lived a fascinating and full life. And in a few seconds here, we're going to give everybody in this room a chance to ask you questions. But are there any closing remarks that you'd like to make before we do that?
Well, I don't know about having lived a full life. It's not over yet. My philosophy is I think life keeps getting better. So I'm always looking forward to what comes next. I'm 72 years old, but I think I'm a long way from being over the hill. I run 3 or 4 miles a day, and I ride my bike 4 miles a day when it's not so windy like it has been here recently. But I'm always looking forward to the future. And I have a young attitude, and there's a lot to do yet.
That's what I was going to ask you, if you were still running. That's good. I know you've run some marathons and all sorts of things, haven't you?
Yes. When I started running, I was over in Japan. It was next year will be 40 years ago, and I was always at the upper weight limit during my military career. I was always concerned about my weight, and my commanding officer started this fat boy program, and I didn't want to be put on it. I mean, I was the only woman, but so I didn't figure he'd put me on the fat boy program, but I thought I'd set a good leadership example, and I would just go run with these guys who were on the program. And I was shocked to find that I couldn't even run a block. So I just started working at it. In that time, we were over in Rota, Spain from February to May. I went from not being able to run a block to running 9 miles nonstop. And I have been running ever since. That was such agony. I decided right then I didn't ever want to go through that again. So I would just never stop running, and I still do it.
That is fantastic. Okay, well, we are going to let folks ask you questions. What I'd like you to do, since, Diane, you don't know any of us, when you do ask your question, say your name and state your question, and everyone else hold off on the key so that she can key up. So, all right, let's see what people have to say.
Diane, this is John Harris in Southern Ohio. Does anybody in your family still own the farm you grew up on?
Yes, my brother Keith, my older brother, has lived there all his life, and Dad and Mom both lived there until Mom died in 2012. Dad died in 2003, and by then Keith had already taken over the farm. So our family farm is still there. It's the only home we've ever known, because when Mom and Dad came home from World War II, Mom came home to her family farm and found out that these two bachelors had moved onto the farm next door. So she married one of them, and that is the only home that we have ever known.
Captain, thank you very much. That was an impressive presentation. And the nice thing is it shows it was motivation and whatnot, you how far you can go.
And that's Franklin from Missouri. Anyone else?
Well, good evening, Diane. My name is Chuck. I live in Santa Barbara, California. I'm one of the senior citizens around here. I'm 85 years old. And your farm life is very interesting to me, because my cousin lived in Santa Maria, which is about 100 miles north of here, and they lived out on a farm, and we used to go visit quite often, and I enjoyed that. And then another cousin moved out to Arkansas, and we moved there as well, my wife and I. And hauling hay is one thing I never, ever want to do again.
I used to do that when I'd go home on leave. My brothers would make sure that they had some bales there so that I could stack bales just to remember what it used to be like.
Oh, goodness. That's good. Any other questions?
Yeah, well, I have a comment. My wife went to a one-room schoolhouse in northwestern Wisconsin, and for all eighth grade, she was the only one in her class, and she still is a woman in a class by herself.
Hello, my name's Tom Kaufman, and I'm in Denton, Maryland, and I want to echo what Marlene said a few minutes ago. I'm just really grateful that we have somebody, for those of us who like I'll call them the veteran country music artists, we got somebody, that would be you, that keeps us up to date with what's going on, because I don't know of any other source, that tells us what the more traditional country music artists are doing. Well, you keep us up to date with what's going on in all of it. So I just wanted to, state my appreciation for what you do, and hope you keep on keeping on with it. I look forward to it every other week, and look at them, and You're doing a good job. And Maura, you did a good interview. Good job for both of you.
Hey, Diane, Maura, I'm Lenore from Texas. I have shared your magazine with many, many, many people. I think it's fantastic. I've kept some copies because I never, like Tom says, you keep us abreast of what's going on in this industry. And when you go to the concerts, it seems like we're there with you because you describe things so well. And it's like, I envy you because you get to tell these people that I like. So keep up the good work. And it was very interesting, and I enjoyed it so much. I love the magazine. I keep sending it to people all over the world. So I think it's great.
Diane, my name's Rod. I'm from Nova Scotia, Canada. I'd like to know how many brothers and sisters you have and where you fall in the lineup as far as age. And do you have any children?
My older brother, Keith, I mentioned, who is still on the farm. So I'm number two. And then my sister came along, Kale, and the one who was in the Navy. And then my brother, Kenny. So the four of us grew up together. And then I mentioned Ron came along 14 years after Kenny. And so he grew up kind of by himself, and he went to town school, of course. He never got to go to our country school. And both Ron grew up wanting to be in the Army because Kenny was in the National Guard. And Kenny has since died. He got hepatitis and had a liver transplant. But so Ron did an Army military career, and my sister and I did a Navy military career. And like I mentioned, Mom was in the Navy and Dad was in the Army, so we were kind of a military family.
Yeah, Diane, this is Terry Borden, that one that's been working with you for a while. Between the two of us, we made it work. That was great. You did a good job. Good to work with. I wanted to just let you know it was a great interview. You and Mar both did a great job. And I do enjoy your newsletter. Also, I have a question for you. I'd like to remove my one email address and add another one so I continue getting your newsletter. Is there a way you recommend to do that?
Well, yes. If you're already getting my newsletter, you can just reply to it or send a note to the DeGene address. You have that one because you sent me your phone number on that address. But for everybody else who doesn't have it, the other way is to send an email to Diane@DianeDeekman.com, and I will make the change.
Hi, Diane. This is Cheryl from Jacksonville, Florida, Navy town, and I want to thank you for your service. And you mentioned your mom was in the Navy in World War II. What did she do in the service?
Are you still there, Diane?
Oh, yes, I am. I pushed the wrong button. So, anyway, Mom was at Naval Air Station Hutchinson, Kansas, and she started out as an engine mechanic, but she didn't like being up on the wings of those bombers and the greasy wings and all that sort of thing. So she got an indoor job. She worked on aircraft records and logbooks, which turns out to be the career that my sister had. Kale spent 20 years as an aviation maintenance administration man, and that was kind of what Mom had done during her time in the service.
Hi, Diane. This is Chris Ann in Livonia, Michigan. And I was just wondering, for your newsletter, do you get a lot of information now from folks in the country music industry, especially those in classic country? I think I've seen references of letters from Bill Anderson and Jeannie Seeley and the like, that knowing that you have this newsletter to help, you know, get information out there about what's going on with people and how much contact you have like that.
Bill Anderson and Jeannie Seeley have both been subscribers for a long time, so every once in a while they send me personal notes. And I am on the distribution list for quite a few public affairs people who send me their press releases. and including Jeannie's publicist. So often I get a press release, and then I will write about that in the newsletter. So a lot of it comes from people who send me letters, and the press releases that I get in my email, and then of course I do an internet search. I have certain online sources, magazines that I look every week to see if there's something that seems interesting to talk about.
Diane Lenore, how do you decide what to put in your newsletter? What you probably get so much information. How do you decide what to put in the newsletter? They're also wonderful. They just it's full of all kinds of good stuff.
Well, I stay mostly with the classic people. A lot of information that are in the online ones I don't talk about, or people who don't interest me. Every once in a while, I'll find an article that just sounds kind of interesting or intriguing, so I'll stick that in there just to be a little something different. But it comes out to be just a pretty good amount, I guess. I mean, it varies in lengths. Sometimes it's 8 pages long, and sometimes it's 16 pages. So I never know how long it's going to be. But as for what I put in it, it's pretty much what I have, or it I feel like putting this article in it, or something. And then I get to the point where, oh, this is just long enough. I quit.
Okay. One more time. Does anyone have any final questions before we wrap this up?
Hello. This is Wayne Weissman, and I'm from Australia, Diane. Very pleased to meet you. Thank you for giving you your time to share with us tonight. It's been an absolute delight. It really is. I'm glad I came to the event. I'm one of those lazy people who has not subscribed to the newsletter, but I enjoy receiving it from others who do send it on. Anyway, but my question is, during your naval career, did you visit our shores? Did you ever come to Australia?
Yes, I did. I was there twice. I took leave one time when I was stationed on Guam, and I visited a friend of mine who was a Navy exchange officer over there. So he took me to a few places, and I think that's the time I flew into, it was in Sydney and Brisbane, and we went to Canberra. And I saw the national capital, and I fell in love with wombats. I bought a stuffed wombat while I was there. And then another time was official business, and I flew there. The Belle of Wood, the USS Belle of Wood, was tied up at a port there, and I forget where that was. But I went there, and I got helicoptered onto the Belle of Wood, and I rode that. But what my impression of Australia was that it was so clean and friendly, and everybody seemed to be so proud of their country, and I just enjoyed being there, and I'd like to go back again some.
Yes, we were once like the United States. Very proud of our country. Well, I won't get into the influences that are at play, you know, generally in the world. But I live in Brisbane, so it's been an absolute delight. Thank you.
Hello, Diane. I'm Mary from Toronto, Canada. Have you ever been to Canada?
I have not. That's one country I haven't been to yet, and I hadn't had a reason to go up there. I want to. I look forward to getting up there sometime, but it hasn't happened yet.
Come to Toronto during the summer. There's lots to do and see here.
I would like to.
Diane, thank you so much for coming and being interviewed here on our little site. And we just appreciate so much the time and effort that you put in and your patience with all the little computer glitches that we had. And we're just looking forward to continuing to hear about what you're doing and getting the newsletter. And eventually when the Randy Travis book appears on the scene, we're all interested in reading that. I know I'm definitely going to read it. Is your other book about your childhood, is that in audio form?
The one that's in audio form is Navy Greenshirt. I haven't had the other two done yet. Farron's and Marty's biographies are both available in audio books, but my other two memoirs, which we didn't talk about tonight, like I said, Navy Greenshirt, I do have that in an audio book. The first one is A Farm in the Hydewood, about growing up and on the farm in South Dakota, and then the last one is Mommy Watch Me, about adopting my daughters, which reminds me of a question that somebody asked me and I missed answering. I became a mother at age 50 when I was a Navy captain in Los Angeles. I adopted a pair of sisters. They were ages 5 and 7. Their parental rights had been terminated. Their parents had, the kids were taken away from them. So that was in 2000. And we moved to Maryland, and I retired from the Navy there. And then we moved to South Dakota in 2010. And that book covers those 10 years.
Okay, well, good. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because at the end of your Navy Greenshirt book, you hadn't had any children yet, and you always kind of had that desire. So I am so glad that came true for you. Well, you have a wonderful continuing career, and now that you're a member, anytime you want to stop by and see us now that your computer is working, we'd sure love to have you.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It was neat talking to so many people and the countries that I have readers from on my newsletter and the different places that I've been to visit throughout my Navy career. And somebody was from Jacksonville. I was stationed in Jacksonville twice. I lived in Orange Park. I had two tours of duty there. So it's really fun to talk to people who are in the, who live in places that I've been. So I thank all of you for being so attentive and interested, and I really enjoyed talking to you, and I'd love to come back sometime.
Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. God bless you, and thanks again.
I'm gonna love you forever and ever, forever and ever, forever and ever, forever and ever.
Amen.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.